This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome again to All About Living here on 106.7 FM, 1670 AM WTDY. Getting pretty good at remembering that now. We are now simulcast on both AM and FM bands, which is just great to give more audiences an opportunity to listen to our programming. You can also like us on Facebook, All About Living. And there is also a free app available for your cell phones. So just you can download for free WTDY and have that available and just click on it so you can tune into us at any point. And if you're out of the listening range, of course, WTDY.com and click on Listen Now and you'll get all of the live streaming of our radio programs. We're here with you 10 o'clock every Saturday morning, and we always have fascinating guests who have a great deal of knowledge about a lot of topics that we often aren't exposed to. And I think just this opportunity to learn more about what's happening in the world and these situations that people encounter and the challenges and opportunities available is just rewarding in itself. And today is certainly no exception. We're going to talk about a topic that it's been mulling in my mind, and I don't think I've ever done a program on this topic. And I will have been on the air next month. It'll be 10 years. So this is a first, and not often do we have a first discussion on any topic on All About Living. But today we're going to talk about epilepsy. And epilepsy is something that is either on the front page or discussions because our Supreme Court justice, for example, had a seizure a couple of years ago. And so people were, the U.S. Supreme Court justice, people were discussing that and talking about, well, what does this mean and will he be able to function? And then that conversation came out in the open, and it was very good for the concept of epilepsy to know that this is not something that negates a person from living a full and productive and contributory life. But there are many facts about epilepsy that are interesting, and I really did not know. And I did not know that epilepsy affects more people than multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, and Parkinson's disease combined. And these are all subjects that I've had programs on in the past. But actually, the funding is less for epilepsy research than half of any of those that I just listed. And I didn't know that one-third of all people with epilepsy cannot control their seizures with medicine, and that 1 in 26 people will develop epilepsy during their lifetime. And that seems like a fairly large number, and one that is surprising to many people, and I think that's evolving because of the research and the knowledge that the medical community and the research community is learning about epilepsy. We have two people with us today who know a lot about epilepsy because it has touched their lives personally, and they are doing something about it as well to bring the message to all of us. And joining me on All About Living today are Anne Morgan Giroux and Colleen Penwell. And welcome. This is your first time that you've been on this program, and I've heard about you and the wonderful work you're doing, and it's just a pleasure to have you here in our studio with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Now, tell me, let's talk first about your personal relationship with epilepsy. I know that it has touched your family with your children, correct?
Yes, both Colleen and I's daughters both have epilepsy.
And tell me your story, Anne. Let's start with you.
Well, our daughter, Lily, is 16, and she was diagnosed with epilepsy when she was about 2 years old. It's a different kind of epilepsy than most people think about on a daily basis. She has atonic seizures, which are drop seizures. And when she was a toddler, she would be walking along and she would just sort of fall to the ground and then quickly pick herself up and go about her business. And as if you remember the toddler days, there is a lot of falling anyway, mm-hmm. So it was hard to discern what was going on. But after several EEGs and tests, she was finally diagnosed with epilepsy. And my husband and I look back at old videos of her, and we actually think that seizures began even before 2 years old.
She was having seizures and then diagnosed with epilepsy. Are the two interrelated, or do people who have seizures, is that always the diagnosis of epilepsy?
I think the general rule of thumb is that when you have more than one seizure, you're diagnosed with epilepsy, and usually they're used interchangeably. But sometimes, I mean, anyone can have a seizure if they reach a certain threshold, if they've had too much to drink, or if their body is under extreme stress. But it's when you develop them more than once, multiple times, that you get the classification of epilepsy.
What is the official definition of epilepsy?
Okay, that's for a neurologist to answer. But it's basically
from your knowledge.
It's basically when experience. The neurons get so excited and they all start firing at one time that a seizure is produced, and the seizure can have all kinds of manifestations. It can be a tonic-clonic, which is what a lot of people consider when they think of a seizure. It can be an absence seizure, which is sort of the blinking of the eyes and staring into space. It could be licking the lips. It could be a mannerism. It could be a feeling. Mm. There's dozens and dozens of different kinds of seizures, which I think a lot of people wouldn't recognize.
And when you talk about these dancing neurons, this is all taking place in the brain, correct?
Correct.
And Colleen, first of all, before Colleen tells your story, Lily was two when she was officially diagnosed. How old is Lily now?
She's 16.
Wow.
She's a sophomore in high school, and she's doing very well.
Excellent.
Yep.
Oh, so you've got a teenager on your hands.
Well, I have two of them, actually.
Colleen, you also have a daughter that has been diagnosed with epilepsy. Explain your story.
Sure. Grace is our middle child. We have three children. And when Grace was 9 months old, she had her first seizure, and I had no idea what a seizure was. I had never seen it, so I had no context. We were told that this was a classic febrile seizure, which means, which is somewhat common in infants. Apparently 4% of babies have febrile seizures, which is when your fever spikes very rapidly. And we were told that she would outgrow them, and it shouldn't be a problem. Well, over the course of the next year or so, she continued to have these, oftentimes with fever, but then gradually it seemed that she was starting to have them with less and less fever. By the time she was two, she was diagnosed with epilepsy. Her seizures were sort of all over the spectrum. She had generalized seizures, which some people know as grand mal seizures, the very, very big, jerky, where you lose consciousness. You know, your whole body is convulsing, making sounds. So she was put on her first medication at that point. And even at that point, statistically, she was in, you know, hopefully was going to be in a good place. 80% of people who are put on an anti-seizure medication are typically controlled, meaning that they have very few or no seizures once they're on the medication. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case for Grace. So over the course of now, you know, she's 13 now, the next several years, Grace has been on dozens of medications, which have just some devastating side effects. She's had brain surgery. She's had an implant device called a vagal nerve stimulator. She's been on a very, very rigorous special diet, which works for some people, called the ketogenic diet. Unfortunately for Grace and our family, those treatments have not been successful in that she still does suffer from seizures at least once a week, sometimes, you know, more than that. And about 3 years ago, she was diagnosed with a very severe form of epilepsy that's called Dravet syndrome, and it's a genetic disorder. So we now know, after all of this time, that her manifestation of epilepsy is genetic. So that was an interesting piece of information. Would it have changed, you know, her course? We don't know, but we do know, and science is showing us, that genetics do play a big part in it. So that's her story. She is now 13, very excited to turn 14. Her seizures, unfortunately, over time have caused some significant cognitive delays and some physical disabilities as well in terms of balance and speech and things like that. But that said, she's a delightful, sweet, outgoing young lady.
Well, with she's in school.
She sure is.
Yes, and you did say that she's, you had told me prior to her going on the air, she's in a special ed class.
She is. She's very integrated in in the whole seventh grade. She's a seventh grader at Badger Ridge, and so she does receive some special services, but she's pulled in throughout the day into all of the most of the classes.
And this has provided an opportunity for the school and her classmates to really learn about epilepsy and also how to, without panicking or going through all kinds of major concerns, that when a seizure does occur, what to do and how to handle it and how to take it in stride and through educated knowledge about it. And so when she does have seizures at school occasionally.
Yes.
And what happens?
It's fascinating, actually, to see children. You know, you talk about looking at things through the eyes of a child and the poise and the grace that some of these students over the years have acquired because of kids like Lily and Grace. The kids who go to school with Grace know Grace for who she is, and part of who she is somebody who has seizures. So if she is to have a seizure at school, you know, there's staff always around, and so they make her safe. It's not that there's really anything to do, anything they can do in Grace's case to stop the seizure. So it's a matter of making sure she's safe, and then, you know, they have a protocol to, you know, get her transported. They have a special sort of stretcher to get her into the nurse's room, and really, for the most part, people go about their business. They the kids care. They ask. They actually, at the beginning of every year, my husband and I have asked that the teachers talk to the kids so that they're educated about epilepsy and so that there can be a dialogue. So it's not a scary thing. And we've gotten feedback from the staff that the types of questions, now that they're in seventh grade, it's so interesting to hear how their questions and their knowledge has evolved. And so the silver lining to this is that there are now truly hundreds of kids at through Lily, through Grace, through the other parents who have children with epilepsy who are more informed and who hopefully will help bring epilepsy out of the shadows. You know, maybe one of them will become, you know, a neurologist, more neuroscientist. We need more of them. So that's a good thing.
And if and just in our daily living, that we have a better understanding, so we know what to do, and we have our own personal protocol of accepting epilepsy and understanding what it's all about, and being a good friend and neighbor and family member to somebody who might be diagnosed with epilepsy.
And it's also important to remember, too, that in Grace's case, hers are very severe seizures. But as Anne had talked about, there's dozens of seizures, and so dozens of different types. So if you have epilepsy, it does not mean that, you know, your friend is going to be going down and you're going to have to be, you know, rescuing them. It can be, as Anne said, you know, just something in the brain that's kind of going blip for, you know, it can be a couple seconds, it can be a couple minutes.
And it certainly doesn't have to be debilitating.
Correct.
And that could be probably, I would assume, that's one of the major misperceptions that you're dealing with when people say epilepsy. They think of the grand mal seizure, and that's all the perception that they have of it, where it can, it's really a spectrum.
Right, and that's the only kind I ever knew about when, with my little knowledge of epilepsy before Lily was diagnosed, and there are all kinds, and they range from, you can get them under control and they're very quick and fast, or, you know, unfortunately, you can't get them under the control and they have devastating effects. And one of the things Colleen and I have learned about this whole thing is the more we've been talking about it, the more it's prompted people to say, oh, my dad has epilepsy, or my brother had seizures when they were younger, or my cousin has seizures. And they wouldn't have brought that up had the conversation not been started because Colleen and I had to start it. We were sort of forced to start it, but that's what we've discovered. And that's why you can see the 1 in 26, I think, is out there. It's just not talked about.
Knowledge can be very reassuring. So I really appreciate that you're here today. This program also will be posted on carolcobyradio.com, Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. So if you want to tell any of your friends about it or want to tune in and listen again, it certainly will be able to be accessed beginning sometime next week. We're going to stop for a break. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. And you're listening to All About Living here on 106.7 FM, 1670 AM WTDY.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670. WTDY.
Welcome back to our program here on 106.7 FM, 1670 AM WTDY. All About Living. Also, all programs are posted on carolcobyradio.com. Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. And if you're out of the listening area, be sure to tune in live where all programs are streamed on WTDY.com. So have your laptop with you and click that button. We're talking about epilepsy today, and it's really a fascinating discussion because some of the misperceptions, I think, will be cleared up after this conversation with both of my guests, Colleen Penwell and Ann Morgan Giroux, and they're both mothers of young girls, who were diagnosed with epilepsy at a very early age. And now your daughter, Lily Ann, is 16 years old, and Colleen, your daughter, Grace, is 13 years old. And you have been learning about epilepsy, dealing with it with your children, and bringing the message to others through building awareness. And you also are the founders, the pioneers of Lily's Fund. And this is a fund that is raising money and raising awareness about epilepsy, and the money goes to the UW research?
That's correct.
And you are now at the point of actually having a fellowship in epilepsy research at the university as a result of Lily's Fund, so congratulations.
Thank you.
I wanted to clear up something because we also have another guest that I want to bring in to this conversation, but you talked about, Colleen, that Grace, it turned out that it was a genetic component that brought about her epilepsy. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it was genetically brought through the family line. Is that right?
Correct. And it can be. There are forms of epilepsy that are, genetically carried forward. In Grace's case, it was as simple as having a blood test done based on some input we had gotten in the type of seizures and what was going on with her. They said, you know, she looks like she could maybe have this Dravet syndrome. So we had the blood test done, and it did show that she had Dravet syndrome, which is a sodium channel mutation, which is about as much as I know in that area. That then prompted my husband and myself to have the blood work done for ourselves. Neither of us showed that same genetic issue. So that means that Grace is called a de novo, which means it's just her. So when her genetic code was being created, something must have gone blip. So it doesn't mean that. So for my family, for example, that just means that my other children, don't carry that. And for some families, though, it can be, that can be a problem.
Will this be a gene then that she carries with her?
Yes, she would.
Okay. But what are, do we know what the typical causes of epilepsy are if they are not genetic based?
Well, they can be genetic. One of the major causes right now is traumatic brain injury, especially with our veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. And they've learned a lot about traumatic brain injury lately. They've discovered that if you do have a head injury, sometimes the seizures could appear up to 5 or 10 years later from the injury. And so they're attributing a lot more now to those head injuries than they ever were before. And many times the cause is unknown. Mm-hmm. For example, Lily is one of those people. We don't have it in our family. She does not have a traumatic brain injury that I know of. And it just is there.
It just
and it's
happens.
Unknown. And mm-hmm. that's, I'd say that's probably the majority of people.
And how is epilepsy diagnosed? You mentioned a blood test, Colleen. Are blood tests used to diagnose all forms of epilepsy?
No, not at all, actually. And that was just that one investigation to see if Grace had this Dravet syndrome, which basically is in many ways a label. Would we have done anything different? Would it really affect that much in terms of some of her medications? You know, in some regards, yes. In some regards, no. For the majority of people, as we had talked about, it's when you have a seizure, and if you have, you know, multiple seizures, that's when the diagnosis
comes.
So
it's the events themselves.
Correct. And then there's the diagnostic tools such as the EEG, you know, the classic EEG mm-hmm. where you're hooked up and they, you know, monitor what's going on in your brain. And that is where they really can show, you know, in many cases come back and tell you, here's what's going on. Here's where things are starting. Because the type of seizure that you have is in many, many, many ways dependent on where it starts in your brain or where it's appearing. So if it's in the temporal lobe versus, you know, deep inside or on one side of the brain versus the other, because we know that, you know, the different sides of the brain control different things that your body does. And so that's why some people, their speech is affected more. Some people are affected more in their motor control. So that's a lot of it.
Our brain is so complex. Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, I want to bring in our surprise guest. I'm taking him from behind the scenes.
A very productive member of society.
Yes, a very productive. Yes, you are
Carol,
very productive.
This is what she said before we came on. Carol, I'm Sly's producer.
Yes.
That should say it all, right?
That should say it all. And here is Captain Morgan. He is known mostly by, but his full name is Morgan Welk. And he is Sly's producer, and I have the privilege of having him as my producer as well. And when I was—
Faithful producer. That's
faithful.
That's what I call you.
Faithful or faithful?
When I call you, I go, this is your faithful producer,
yes,
Colin.
Yes, it is. Yes, and you live up to it. Believe me, you live up to it. I don't know what I would do without you. But anyway, when I was preparing for this program and I was telling you about we're going to do a program on epilepsy and you just nonchalantly said to me, oh, I have epilepsy. I'm being treated for epilepsy. And I was surprised. I had no idea. All you do is everything very, very well and you're always there for me. And you are this professional person and I had no idea what you're personally, anything about you. So I've invited you to join the conversation and to share your experience because it really helps enlighten us on what the whole process is. From what you were telling me, even the medical people that you were working with did not know early on that it was epilepsy, so it took a long time.
I am the walking definition of misdiagnosis for epilepsy or perhaps even, you know, the lack of diagnosis, mm-hmm. a lot of these things. I'm 29 now. And I would say that the symptoms first started appearing right around the fifth grade or so. What was happening when really the first incident happened was a cow eye dissection in my fifth grade class. We had, I don't know, kind of an ambitious teacher. So, you know, it's kind of a disgusting thing. We called up the butcher and they brought in all these cow eyes. And we were sitting there dissecting these things. And they thought that maybe this, you know, so we could look at the lenses and you get an idea of what cataracts look like. I don't remember what it was all about because I had a seizure. So that's what happened. And they figured that maybe, you know, just the smell or something or just the gross out factor, they pretty much just thought I fainted. So I spent a couple of days in the hospital. I got a huge response from all my classmates. I think I got a handmade get well card from everybody in the school. So that was really cool, but that was written off as nothing. A couple years later, the same thing happened to me in an art class, and that time I got sent to kind of a cardiac, some kind of cardiac diagnosis regimen, where I had EKGs put all over me. I also had the epilepsy test where I had the EEG. I call it the Medusa machine.
It's a good name for it.
Yeah. So I went through that. I had CAT scans and all these different things. I was on heart medication for a while, which I didn't need.
And this was what you basically did. You blacked out.
Yeah, I just blacked out. Mm-hmm. I was pretty young at that point, and I really mm-hmm. didn't have any idea what was happening to me. And I would just wake up, you know, either by myself somewhere or in an ambulance or in the classroom with people looking down on you. So it really was kind of scary, but I didn't really let it affect me too much, you know, just the fact that I didn't know what it was.
Why did they put you on heart medication? What did they think was possibly
wrong? Oh, they thought
wrong?
That maybe, I mean, my mother has a heart murmur, which she had surgery for, a valve replacement. So they figured maybe something genetic with that. Keep in mind, this was when I was, about 11 years old, 12 years old. And that was a long time ago. I'm 29 now, and that's as old as both of their daughters combined.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with your daughter's diagnosis, I think that having it happen in this age of medicine as mm-hmm. opposed to before when, you know, my hospital in Ripon where I grew up didn't even have a CT scanner. They brought one in. If you needed a CT, you either got, you know, driven to Madison or they would send up a semi with a CT scanner in the back of it and park it in the parking lot. So the way that technology has moved along with epilepsy, I think is, you know, progress, but probably not as much progress as we could hope for.
Well, some of the really deep answers still aren't there, but there's certainly better diagnostic equipment and treatments available. So you were on the heart medication. And
I was on the heart medication.
And then what happened?
Well, for the rest of my adult life, for the rest of my life before I turned 18 and started doing things like working, just instead of going to school every day, everything was going okay up until about the age of 24, which is when I had my seizure, basically my first witness seizure in front of adults in my adult life. And it was while I was here in this building, I was in a meeting with a couple of my superiors, and it was a very stressful situation, which is kind of like dissecting the cow eye, I don't know how many years ago. So I'm sitting there, you know, it's a consult, which I guess in the world of radio means you're going to sit down there, you listen to tapes of yourself, and then they tell you how horrible you are.
Mm.
So I was sitting there, you know, we were listening, I think, to myself reading a news story or traffic reports, and all of a sudden I just kind of gave off a blank stare, and they asked me a question, and I couldn't get the words out. I didn't make any sense when I said it, and I smacked my head down on this granite meeting table that we have up there in what we call the fish tank. It's our little meeting room, I guess, a conference room that we have. Granite table, bam, bloody nose, laying on the floor, and they didn't know what to do.
And you were out.
I was out. I have general seizures. They do start out as a partial frontal lobe seizure, and then it just basically goes out of control from there, and I wind up on the ground. So it does go into a grand mal
seizure. So you were going through this consult, and you passed out. And then Tom Walker, was he in the office? Or in the room?
He was
with
not
you?
In the room.
But somebody called
but
him.
When something, yeah, when 911 gets dialed, Tom Walker, our president, obviously gets notified. And
if you were on the board right now, you'd be waving at me that it's time to go to break, Carol. It's time to go to break.
So. I was thinking about that. I don't even know. Usually I'm the one in control of the situation.
I know, but you are so good. I tell you, you're really good on both sides of the microphone. And we are going to take a break. And when we come back, you stay here because we want to.
When I come back, I'm going to set my timer. So we'll hear a little beep next time.
Okay, this segment of our program, All About Living, has been brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our program, and we're going to continue with our discussion where we left off. A fascinating discussion today on the subject of epilepsy. And the statistic is that 1 in 26 people will develop epilepsy during their lifetime. It often is discovered at birth or when child is a baby, but it doesn't have to be at birth. It can be at any time of life. We have three separate examples in the studio with us today. Colleen Penwell and Anne Morgan Giroux are both here, and they are the founders of Lily's Fund, and they are also mothers of girls who were diagnosed with epilepsy at an earlier age. Lily at 2 and your daughter Grace, Colleen, at age 9 months. And also joining us today, and I am privileged to have him on this side of the microphone, my faithful producer, Morgan Welk.
Diagnosed at 24.
24, and better known as Captain Morgan, and he has just told his stirring story of how he was suffering actually from epilepsy symptoms throughout from your fifth grade on and was never diagnosed until
probably lifelong. Yep.
Yeah. Age 24. And now you are on medication and it is controlled. And you certainly alleviate any misperceptions that anybody might have that if you have epilepsy, then you have limitations in life, because you certainly have no limitations.
Well, I can't say that I don't like to live dangerously. You know, I live alone, which has kind of been kind of interesting, just going through this whole thing alone.
When we were talking about your nocturnal
seizures
that you would have, and you'd have to deal with those yourself. Colleen, and you are working with Lilly's Fund, and this is to raise not only awareness but dollars for research, because it's amazing the few dollars that are spent on research for epilepsy versus the dollars that are spent in other illnesses. And what are they looking for in the research? I know your Lilly's Fund has a fellow now that you are supporting at the UW Hospital.
We just hired our first fellow, and Dr. Hutchinson is looking into something that's really interesting. She's looking at traumatic brain injuries, and if somebody were to have an injury to the head, that there is a marker that's in the brain that she can detect or they can detect with an MRI that will predict the likelihood of seizures down the road. And this could be incredibly important, because right now when you go in, if you've had a seizure, a lot of times you may not go on medication. You're not sure you're going to have another seizure.
What do you mean by marker?
A marker, something that is shown, some kind of thing in your brain, a thing. I'm sure there's a much more technical name for it.
See, that's what I was thinking, is that maybe it is a thing in your brain. Do you know how if you ship something that's very sensitive from overseas, once in a while you'll get kind of a little bubble on the side that says shock detector? So if, you order some vase from Italy and the idiot drops it on the ground while it's in the airport somewhere, then it lights up so that, they know that it was damaged in transit. So that's what I thought, that maybe if you had shock damage to your head, then this could tell you that somehow.
Well, something that you can see on an MRI. So they're looking for when marker could mean anything. Just something that you can see on an MRI that is different than a normal brain.
Mm-hmm. And does it have to be through a head injury? Could it just be somebody had a seizure and you can then check the brain and see if there's a marker that this possibly could be exacerbated?
Well, that's the hope, that you can eventually then take that marker from a brain injury and put it for any kind of seizure. Right now, she's doing very controlled testing on rats, and obviously a brain injury is easy to replicate. So that's why she's looking at that, because that's the first step. But then hopefully there could be a marker for any kind of developing epilepsy in the brain.
And do they know yet what to do about it? Would they, if this is a marker that this could escalate and epilepsy could be diagnosed or more seizures could occur, can we halt it yet? Can we intervene at this point?
Well, one of the most important things that we know, that the medical field knows, is that once a seizure happens, the less times you can have another seizure happen, the better, because those seizure paths get stronger and stronger with every seizure. So let's say we can find a marker and somebody is prone to have a seizure. It's sort of like being poised, ready to go. Like, you would be ready to treat it, as opposed to, Morgan has suffered through, decades now of this. And so, for example, imagine if there was some kind of marker, that they could determine. And so when he would present with some of these symptoms, it would be a much more quick diagnosis.
And just like you go on cholesterol medication because there is a risk of you developing heart disease, you could be put on preventative epilepsy medication because there is a chance you will develop epilepsy. So you'd have to decide yourself on the risk benefits, but it would be an option.
And that's just one of the very many, many areas of neuroscience that are being studied, to just really try to peel back the layers on this very complicated condition.
Are there more funds being directed toward epilepsy research in addition to what you're doing with Lilly's Fund?
Nationally, there is absolutely a movement towards talking about epilepsy more, which then leads to more funding. There's some, national organizations, The Cure and the Epilepsy Foundation, which also are, great friends of Lily's Fund and also do the same kind of thing with awareness and fund raising funds.
I don't think they seem to be quite as grassroots as Lily's Fund.
No.
let me tell you
Bingo.
One thing. Let me tell you one thing about the Epilepsy Foundation. It's primarily kind of a drug company situation. There are a lot of drug companies that do advocate research in epilepsy, both in the diagnosis of it and the treatment of it. But, you know, Lily's Fund is great just because, you know, you don't have any of those ties. You can just think about, you know, the money is going right over there to the hospital down the street.
Right. And that's when the Giroux's founded Lily's Fund. It's the mission is twofold: to increase awareness and to raise funds that go directly to UW-Madison. Because of the type of research that's being done here already. Why not here?
Well, the doctors, they don't take business cards from the farms. It's
well,
good to know.
And it was the Giroux family, your family, that actually started Lily's Fund. And the two of you have personal involvement. You're on a volunteer basis, and you're just going out. Two people telling two people telling two people telling a radio audience.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised at every two people we tell, one of them will raise their hand and say, oh, yeah, my dad has epilepsy.
Exactly.
Or my producer has epilepsy. I mean, that's how common it is once you start talking about it.
Well, it happened to me just in the preparation of having you here today.
We like to think, too, that seizures are where breast cancer was 15 years ago. And I don't know if you remember that, but in the 80s, nobody could even really say the word breast. I mean,
exactly.
And now look at the pink that's everywhere. And so, you know, we want to take this out and we want to make it as comfortable and as easy to talk about epilepsy.
I think epilepsy is purple, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
We're purple.
And Purple Day
is
coming up.
Could be a better color for me, but
Purple Day is a big thing and an easy thing, really easy.
And tell us about Purple Day.
Well, Purple Day was actually
coming up here on March 26th.
We can't take credit for the creation of Purple Day.
No,
it's actually international. It's an international event founded in Nova Scotia, I think. And it's every March 26th. This year it's a Monday. And it is exactly what the name says, Wear Purple Day. So a few years ago, as we talked, we thought this is perfectly fitting with the mission of Lily's Fund. And so Lily's Fund has been involved locally with Purple Day events. So this year, our hope is that businesses throughout the area are willing to encourage their staff to wear purple on the 26th. We're having buttons made and stickers made that acknowledge why you're wearing purple in honor of the 1 in 26 who suffer from epilepsy. Or you can, if you know somebody, you can wear a button that says you're wearing purple in honor of so-and-so. So, you know, we're really encouraging businesses and schools to wear purple and start talking about epilepsy. And if people want to get involved, they can go onto the website to get in touch.
The website is
www.lilysfund.org.
And I will have that on carolcolbyradio.com when we post this.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby.
We're back with the last few minutes of our program. Ann Morgan Giroux is here, as well as Colleen Penwell, and both are mothers of girls who have been diagnosed with epilepsy. And the Giroux family began a fund, Lily's Fund, at the University of Wisconsin for the research, the dollars to go to the research for epilepsy. And Colleen, you and Ann worked together to keep that fund going and to continue the building of awareness about epilepsy, something that a 1 in 26 people are affected by. And I recall a couple of years ago, the cover of Parade magazine, the Axelrod's daughter, David and Susan Axelrod, was diagnosed with epilepsy and is being treated with epilepsy. And it's a rather severe form of epilepsy, I believe. And they have been so instrumental in bringing that conversation forward. And knowledge is truly power. And so we're so pleased that you're here today. And joining us on the set is my own faithful producer, Captain Morgan Welk, who we found out was diagnosed with epilepsy at the age of 24. What would the three of you like people to know about epilepsy?
Could be you.
It could be you.
That's a good one, because I think there is a misconception that it only runs in families, or you can only get it when you're young. But, you know, you can get it in your young 20s like Morgan, or before, your 50s, senior citizens. And actually one of the biggest groups right now is the baby boomers who are aging. And that's one of the biggest groups is showing developing signs of epilepsy. So, yeah, anybody can get it.
And I would say there's no reason there should not be a cure. And, you know, there's no reason that if you look at the numbers, and because epilepsy has in the past been something not so talked about, clearly that's been reflected in the true lack of funding that this condition, which affects 1 in 26 people, has received. So there's no reason that that should be the case. We have incredible research capabilities, and we just need to stay really clear and focused on channeling the right dollars to the right people at the right institutions so that we can get closer and closer to a cure. And there are some really great things that are being done. You know, the nut gets cracked every once in a while, but it is a complex disorder. So we need to keep up the spirit and keep up the funding.
And there are different forms of it from
right.
what you said, and it can start at different parts of the brain. And so each
right.
one has its individuality as
right.
well.
Right.
It's always reassuring, and gives me a sense of pride to learn what's being done here at our own University of Wisconsin, the outstanding mm-hmm. research. And this is certainly no exception in the area of epilepsy. And many thanks to you in setting up the Lilly's Fund, which has even put additional emphasis on it. If people want information about epilepsy, where would they best turn? Would there be one website over another that you would recommend?
Well, if you'd like information about Lilly's Fund, there is some information about epilepsy, and that's lilliesfund.org. But if you just Google epilepsy, you'll be channeled right to WebMD and the Epilepsy Foundation and Cure. And so, you know, obviously, like with any search, the more detail you provide, but there really are a host of sources out there, literature that can be sent to you and whatnot that provides some information. And there's also some good resources available too on, you know, what do I do if somebody I know has a seizure? Or there's resources available for school-age groups. So it kind of depends what type of information, I think, too, you want.
Let me ask you that question. What would I do if somebody had a seizure in front of me? What should I do, Morgan?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Are you talking about a grand mal seizure?
It depends on the type
really
of seizure.
Okay.
It does depend on the type. Gosh, I for a grand mal seizure, I mean, if you're going to talk about the classic seizure where you could see somebody on the ground and it's obvious that they have some neurological problems.
And I think that would be the one that people would be most apprehensive about.
Right.
Well,
it's a scary thing to see.
Yeah, it's scary. And probably the best thing you could do is to put the person on their side, because mm-hmm. vomit, if it causes you to vomit, then you wind up aspirating it in your lungs, and then you got pneumonia and a whole other set of problems on your hands. And then just to make sure that there's not a chair or something that they can knock over to injure themselves with, just basically stay with them. Don't try to wake them up. Wait for them to wake up.
And if you're not sure, the rule of thumb typically is, you know, if somebody is having something like a grand mal seizure or a generalized seizure, if you're not sure, of course, call 911. Why not? But if it lasts, you know, more than 5 minutes, you know, for sure call 911. You also want to make sure that if a person has fallen, that they don't have haven't injured themselves, that they haven't cracked their head or something, because that is a big, you know, unfortunate side effect of having that type of seizure. But if you have another type of seizure where it's, somebody's sort of steering off or is kind of doing more of a twitching kind of action, it's, again, just to make sure you stay with that person, make sure that person's safe, and then talk with that person about, you know, are they okay? Is there anything I can do? But I don't think, you know, obviously with anything else, you don't want to make a big scene, I don't think.
Especially with children, I think the more subtle seizures, too, teachers are often mm-hmm. the ones who might see it. So mm-hmm. it would be talking with the parents, and it may not be a seizure, but if you do see a child staring off or making unusual habitual mannerisms, you know, to talk with the parents about what they're seeing and observing and make sure they're aware of it.
That's a huge point, and just a very neat little related story. 2 weeks ago, a woman, a teacher at the school of one of my kids, came up to me and said, and she's been involved in Lily's Fund, and came up and said, you know, I just want you to know that because of what the little bit I've learned through Lily's Fund, I've been noticing this behavior of a student. Talked to the parents. At first, they were not willing to sort of acknowledge this. But long story short, they've done some additional testing, and sure enough, this child is having seizures. So, you know, that's a great step in the right, not for that child, but at least awareness.
Education. Hopefully mm-hmm. this program has helped along those
Absolutely.
Lines.
Yes, thank you.
Ann Morgan Giroux and Colleen Penwell, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for what you're doing for Lily's Fund, both in research dollars and building awareness. And a special thank you to my faithful producer, Captain Morgan, for sharing your very personal story, and sometimes people aren't willing to do it, and it makes such a difference mm-hmm. when you're so gracious about stepping forward and explaining what your situation has been and how you are managing it successfully. And Google information about epilepsy. Go to liliesfund.org to learn more and to contribute to the research.
March 26th. Go to Lily's Luau 2013.
Yes.
Lily's Luau. It's a big event in January.
January 26th.
March 26th is Purple Day, so wear purple and honor someone who has epilepsy, or do a shout-out or an accolade to epilepsy research and learning more about it as fast as we can.
And then if any businesses or organizations do want to show their support on March 26th, to let us know. Email or go to the website and find out what you can do on Purple Day.
To liliesfund.org. This will all be on carolcolbyradio.com. The program as well will be posted by the end of this week. Thank you again, and thank you for listening to All About Living here on 106.7 FM, 1670 AM WTDY. Now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.
I want a new drug, one that does what it should.